All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, Joe. We're so excited to have you.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is so fun because we're going to be talking today all about trad wives, and you are kind of like a, I don't know if I would say a trad wife expert, but you really specialize in this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would. Somehow I have become America's, or maybe the world's leading expert on trad wives inadvertently. Not a thing I expected to be when I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania 22 years ago. But you know what? Life throws curveballs at you. So you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, never. Absolutely. Absolutely. Will you tell us, for anyone who isn't familiar with your work?
Yeah.
Because I think what's also so cool about what you do, Joe, is you used to work in celebrity gossip magazine, sort of.
I sure did.
So you know all the stuff behind the curtain. So how did your past experience kind of lead you into specializing in trad wives?
Down the primrose path.
Yes.
I like to say. Yeah, you know, I've been a journalist for my entire career since I was 18 years old. And my first major job outside of college was as a gossip columnist for the New York Daily News. I knew nothing about celebrities. I knew nothing about gossip. But I wanted a job where I got to stay in New York City. And that was what I could get. And so I figured it out real fast. And I tell everyone that being a gossip columnist, especially back then, this is pre-internet, really, like pre-celebrity blogs, pre-social media. It could train you to be any kind of reporter. And I went on from there to be a political reporter, to be a travel journalist, to cover business. I covered everything else because, you know, covering celebrities, it just teaches you to do anything, to be so incredibly nimble. And I also got to see how the sausage was made in the Hollywood industrial complex. And when we're looking at social media these days, which I do a lot in my podcast Under the Influence, these are our new breed of celebrities. You know, when I remember when reality television stars were just coming up in the Hollywood ecosystem, the rise of influencers is the same thing. You know, they're taking our attention away in the exact same way. These are our new celebrities, our new content creators. And I genuinely think that they have to be covered as such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about covering them as such, can you expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah. You know, I first started covering influencers 5 years ago. Yeah. My second baby was just born. She had colic. She did not sleep. And so I was awake all night, holding a baby with one hand and scrolling Instagram with the other. And I was being served all of these images. This was the early days of mom influencers.
Yes.
Okay. But I was served all these women with these beautiful white houses in these long flowing, very clean linen dresses with these happy babies. And I was like, my baby's not happy. I'm covered in pee. And my house doesn't look like that. And I was fascinated by this world they were creating. And so I did a deep dive. I created the Under the Influence podcast. I started reporting on how this worked. So the behind the scenes and the things that I used to do with celebrities, such as following the money, right? Who is getting paid to do what by who? Yeah. And I think that's the kind of reporting that has to be done here. We have to cover influencers both as a media phenomenon and then also as a business. Mm-hmm. So we have to be dissecting the money. We have to be dissecting, you know, who has power in these dynamics? And then how are they also presenting it to you, especially on the platforms? Because I think that people are savvier now. Mm-hmm. But in the early days of social media, we really thought we were just getting a window into people's real lives.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. We're seeing media here, right? And once I realized that, once I'd reported on this, I no longer feel bad when I look at influencers because I'm like, you're just making a magazine or something, right?
Yeah.
You're hiring a photographer. You're renting a house. That's my favorite one, that influencers rent houses. to
or like renting film. The private planes, right? Like,
yes,
or they pose on the planes
to film their content. Like, they will literally rent an influencer house to like do their waking up in the morning routine content.
Wow.
And to do all of their kitchen recipe content. Like, none of this is real. Essentially everyone is lying to you, which I made the title of my new influencer book, because I'm like, when you go online, just if you go with the mantra, everyone is lying to you, 90% of the time it's going to be true. And then I think you feel a lot better about yourself.
I'm really curious, like, who are the particular influencers that you follow the most, have paid the most attention to, feel are the most like influential in this space? Because part of, I think if we're going to like just dive right into the Trav Life vibe. It's been really interesting because I am someone who is very interested in politics. I am very liberal in my belief system. And so thus my FYP is just filled with all of this stuff. And I have tried really hard in my own deconstruction journey to try to keep distance between me and Trad Wife content.
How's that going
for you? Not great. Because it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in everything. And then when you're a single woman, it feels like the algorithm like pumps that to you. It's it's very sinister feeling. Yet I think I've been seeing a lot of the TradWife content that does take off reposted through other people's accounts and people being like more reflective of it and kind of dissecting it and what this means. And so I think because it was so close to home to me for so long, I'm really curious, like, who are the ones that stand out to you? I mean, obviously there's Ballerina Farm. Like, that's just.
I mean, the Ballerina Farm of it all. Yes. Yes, absolutely. I don't personally follow anyone. Right. So like, here's my dirty secret. Because I look at this like work and because, you know, I want to save my everlasting soul, I don't follow many influencers at all. But so I don't follow any of them. I tune in when I'm looking for things. And I mean, much like you, I get served, right?
Yeah.
But I never go. I rarely go to the For You page. Because it's just a minefield. Also, the For You page knows that I've been on a semi-glutide, so I get all of these like 40-something women lifting weights and essentially huffing protein. And I'm like, you know, I'm good.
But no, thank you.
Of course, like the Ballerina Farm of it all. But then you have all of the Ballerina Farm cosplayers who are popping up. And my feed did get very Maha heavy. For a while, until I kind of shut that down. I get Jasmine DeMatteis. You know, she's the one who talks all the time about how women have been made to believe that staying home is the unempowered choice. And again, I love stay-at-home moms. I think stay-at-home moms are the CEOs of their household. Tradwives have nothing to do with that. To me, tradwives are a very political branding machine designed to make women participate in their own oppression. To say, okay, maybe you're burnt out from the corporate world. Feminism failed you. Girl bossery failed you. Those things might be true, okay? But the way to lean out is to just let a man take care of you. Don't worry about working or politics or agency or protecting your rights. Just tune out and bake, girl, because that's the answer to everything. That's the very dangerous tradwife message that I see in there. And we know for a fact that this has been pushed by conservative groups. They have been funding various tradwife content. They've been boosting tradwife content in order to make a woman giving up her agency seem very beautiful and very aspirational, because they know that women are burnt out. Because yes, the world did not change as women moved through the ranks and got more educated and moved up in the workforce. We were given no support, corporations didn't change, and men didn't change.
In fact, they made it harder.
They made it worse. In fact, they just made it worse. Exactly.
Yeah. And along those same lines with kind of this like very different messaging between what an actual, I think, stay-at-home mom is and who they are and how they operate. The Tradwife pipeline feels like particularly triggering to me because it reminds me of the messaging that I received about home life growing up when I would go to church and the cultural.
I'd love to hear that. I know that I'm the guest here, but I would love to hear what kind of messaging you were getting.
Yeah. So it was like my heaviest involvement would have been probably like 2000 to like 2015. So when I was about from like 10 to 25, that was when, you know, prior
formative
to 10,
age, Sam.
Formative age. Like,
right, right.
You know, prior to 10, you're just kind of going, you're not really paying attention as much. I don't really remember paying attention. I just knew church was something we did every Sunday and that was that. In my religion, at the age of, oh gosh, I think I can get this right. At 9, it's 9 or 10, you start this thing called achievement days.
Okay.
And so it's for 9 to 11-year-olds and it's girls. And while boys are going to do scouts, you are doing different activities like sewing or you're learning to bake or you're getting together and hanging out. And we would do like etiquette lessons sometimes.
Okay.
And these very like, they would be presented almost as like hobbies or like things to do. But there was a very, looking back, I can see now like the gender divide was insane.
Right.
And then, at 12, you go into what's called young women's. And so young women's is from 12 to 18. And that's like the teen group for women. And over the years, it was constant conversations about getting married, dating, like how to, you know, being a wife and a mother. And, you know, we would plan our weddings and we would have, you know, we would talk about kids and, you know, this idea of like how you be supportive of your husband and like this messaging that the higher calling for you was to be a wife and a mother.
Right, right.
And that if you did go out and go to school and get a career, you were doing that in the waiting period until you got married and had kids. Like people would say all the time, like, oh, like, you know, it's great that you're doing this while you can. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like this
enjoy
messaging,
this time for yes, you.
That your independence is limited. Like you, and that they were being so forward thinking for even offering me a limited period of independence.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it's that servitude that gets me every time. And the idea that a woman's highest calling should be to be a wife. First of all, you know, I mean, I want to take the mother part out of this.
Yeah.
I'm okay with saying, you know, someone's highest calling could be to be a
for
mom.
Sure.
I'm down with that. Like, I like motherhood. My kids are great. But the wife part nails me every time because I think there is so much value in being a great partner. But I don't think that should be anyone's highest calling. I mean, I think that there's so much more we can do with our lives than, you know, be serving, and that's how they talk about tradwives, someone else, particularly a man. Yeah. So, yeah, that gets me every time, the wifedom of it. And also what they don't talk about when it comes to this whole model of, you know, there is a whole, you know, political group right now that wants women to drop out of the workforce and to be back in the house and barefoot and pregnant and making all of the babies. And aside from the fact that they don't support any of these children once they come out of the womb, there's also the fact that men mostly can't support that lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so this is also dangerous for men. I'm going to get these numbers wrong because I haven't run them in a couple weeks and I have perimenopausal brain, but here's the ballpark, okay? The average, and this is just white men, the average white man in America makes about $62,000 a year. After taxes, he's bringing home about $53,000 a year. The average American family is spending about $70,000 a year. Hmm. And so it's simply not – where are all these men, okay, who are supporting a one-income family? Like how is that going to be possible in this idyllic utopian future where all of the women – are in the homes. And these are families who aren't paying for private school. Right. So the economics of it make absolutely no sense. And frankly, most Americans can't live on a single salary anymore. And so it's a pipe dream. So we're also setting men up for failure. But we're saying you have to be the primary breadwinner or you're a failure. You're not doing your job. And how stressful is that for men?
Yeah, I was scrolling or I had something pop up in a very I think I sent it to you, Sam, a very alarming like video that popped up. We both live in Florida, which is, you know, a whole nother topic that we could get into. We live in the Tampa Bay area, and someone was in Tampa and he was talking about just where's his wife? He's so sick of women, you know, and he was like a younger guy, probably in his like late 20s, just talking about wanting a woman and how dangerous it is that women are working and all of that stuff. And I think what's – it's so hard with algorithms to tell when this shift happened, how it happened. Have I just – obviously, I've been knowing it's been happening the past couple of years, and I think in some ways COVID really accelerated it. But it is so interesting – like from your perspective, I think, Joe, how long has this pipeline been going on? How, I mean, I know like you, I listened to your interview when I read the book, A Well-Trained Wife, right? And Tia Levings talks about how this, you know, is even connected to the Duggars and things like that. And, but I guess my question is, it feels a lot more mainstream now, especially with now Trump getting elected, especially with some of these influencers coming out and saying, yeah, like, I have voted for Trump and I've wanted this for a while and now I'm free of having to pretend, essentially. Right. But yeah, when you look at it, how long does this feel like it's been in the making, I guess, is my question.
We know that this has been in the making for a long time. Okay. I mean, I would say for about a decade. And, you know, conservative groups have admitted as much. Charlie Kirk has said before, you know, the head of Turning Point USA, he's said that they've been focusing on influencers for a very long time because they knew that the left had Hollywood and they had no one. And so they had to build a network of their own celebrities. And we're seeing that pay off now. And for a lot of people, they're like, these people came out of nowhere. And I'm like, no. They have been built up and been here for a long time. And then, you know, also Mormon women were the very early mom bloggers, the very early mom influencers, because the church did encourage them to journal and share their lives and to blog, and then ultimately to get on social media as well. And they also had the aesthetics that were very pleasing for the platform. Instagram was originally created as a digital kind of photo sharing app that the founders, who were, you know, model obsessed young men, wanted to look like Vogue. And these women fit that mold. They were beautiful in that manner, thin, blonde, young, and perky. And so this has been happening for a very long time. But I also think that particularly in media and, you know, cultural elite circles, there have been a lot of people hiding in plain sight that are now not afraid to speak up about their more conservative values, or are simply hedging their bets because this is the way the winds are blowing.
Yes. I think that's such a good point. And I like, it brings me to even thinking about one thing that I think is really frustrating is, you know, there's a lot of satire accounts and and it's hard to tell what is satire and what isn't.
I've totally screwed up before. I've totally thought, like, posted something that I thought was a trad wife and I was like, oh, she's joking.
Yeah.
She's joking.
But I think this is the problem. Like, to me, my goalpost is like, if I can't tell whether this is satire or not, this is fueling like the forwarding of trad wife content. And some of the people I think are maybe making fun of it, but they don't care that you can't tell whether it's satire, which drives tons of engagement and makes you more interested. But yeah, some of the satire stuff really bothers me because I'm like, it should be very obvious that this is satire or don't do it.
But it's not. I mean, I don't think it's obvious if the world is satire right now.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. I wake up every morning and I don't – I mean, I can't really see without my readers on. And I don't know if I'm reading the New York Times or the Onion.
This is – I could not agree more. If we go to like the origin of the Mormon moms, right? I remember when I was
I was living in Utah at the time. I was there for 15 years. I remember hearing about so many people speaking about these women who were starting to post. And they would talk about like family and home life and curating home. And the interesting thing was, in the behind the scenes, my friends and I, we would know people who know people who know people, right? Like Salt Lake City is jokingly referred to as Small Lake City. Mm-hmm. Everybody mm-hmm. kind of knows everybody because of the intricacy of Mormon culture and community. And everybody would be talking about how much money these women were making. And that it was a business, and that they were influencers. And there was one, I can't remember her name. She had like 7 or 8 kids, and she had this whole, like, it was like fun on a budget. I'm really trying to remember what her handle was.
It's hard to remember. It really is. Because when you said, can you tell me? And I'm like, oh
they're
my
all
gosh,
the same.
Right? Well, they're, they're all kind of the same. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember hearing about these women who were running these businesses, and they weren't even considered influencers. They were considered entrepreneurs. And I think what has been incredibly frustrating to me is we've kind of had this like explosion of what they've been building up to, right? Mm-hmm. Like I feel like the last 3 or 4 months is the pinnacle point that they have been fighting to get to for a really long time. Of how it's become this.
It's like become cool, which sucks.
It's cool, yes. Which really sucks.
Yeah.
But I think what's so frustrating to me, if we go back to this idea of like the satire versus reality, is I'm like, these women are almost in a lot of ways peddling satire.
Totally. Yeah.
Because they are business owners. They are negotiating brand deals. They are negotiating contracts. They are starting businesses. They have product-based businesses. They have courses. They have this. They have that. And so this idea that they are peddling reality is almost more frustrating to me, because I'm like, no, like kind of what you said earlier about, you know, how the sausage is made. I was hearing behind the scenes from everybody what was really going on with these women. And they're the ones peddling satire to these other women whose husbands are blue-collar and barely making it. And they can't, the women aren't working because they can't afford daycare.
Yeah.
And they feel trapped in their own lives. And they're like, well, my life doesn't look like this. And like, I can't afford these clothes. I can't do these things. But then they have this aspirational like pinpoint that is just so exhausting to take into consideration. And I think when I think of the satire that's being presented, I'm like, no, no, no. Like, it is the actual creators who are putting out satire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, and also, they're just so opportunistic. And, you know, when I first started looking at mom influencers, and this was way pre-peak Tradwife, but what became very clear early on is that this was a business. And, you know, the world of mom influencing was a multi-billion dollar business. And these women, as you said, who are claiming, I'm just a stay-at-home mom. And I hate the just in there.
Right.
But they are not. They are running a media business. And half the time their husbands are quitting their own jobs, their own minimum wage jobs to support their wives' businesses. And so they're peddling a fantasy because they know the algorithm likes it, you know, and that makes us wonder. And there's so much coming out about Meta now.
Yeah.
About the mindset of the men who created these things.
Yes.
You know, for a long time when we were living in a much more liberal utopia, they claimed to be progressive feminist men, the founders of these companies. And we know that's not true because we know the things that they do have the algorithm promoting, which is pronatalism. Women should have as many babies as possible. They want to see women in the home. And so all of this, again, I mean, it's just everyone is lying to you for their own personal gain. Here. And I think that's what we have to remember about this. So much of this is just capitalism at its worst. Also, if you do a dive into a lot of the trad, like quote unquote trad wife messaging, the, you know, I can't believe America worked so hard to make having a baby seem oppressive. That woman is just trying to sell you aprons. Okay. If you click through her shit, she is selling you fucking aprons for $70. And it's the same with Ballerina Farm. It used to drive me crazy that until very recently in profiles of Hannah Nealman, it's like, she's a housewife and she just happens to have all these followers. And I'm like, no, she's the fucking CEO of that company.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't just say that?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it's fine. I have no problem with her creating this kind of content, with using this kind of aesthetic, right? I have some problems with their politics, but, you know, whatever. Free speech still exists in this country, as far as I know. But I did have a problem with pretending, oh, we're living a quiet, simple life. She's a housewife. Mm-hmm. Yep. Instead mm-hmm. of, she's the CEO of this company, and we come from a shit ton of airline generational wealth. Like, yes. Those are all the lies, right? And that's what I mean when I'm talking about covering these people like media personalities, like celebrities, like mm-hmm. business tycoons. Because if it means they're going to make money and grow their audience, they're going to lie to you.
Yeah.
And right. so a lot of the tradwifery isn't real. And yeah. yet, and yet, and yet, it is influencing this generation of young women who have looked mm-hmm. up to women my age in our 40s and been like, are you happy? Mm-hmm. Like, you did all of the work stuff
yeah.
and you're a mom and you don't seem happy. And look, I can tell you, trying to cook anything with kids in a kitchen fucking sucks.
I agree. I have a 2-year-old and I'm like, this is, I don't know.
That, like, again, everyone is lying to you because yeah. there's nothing, like, I mean, I'm not a cook. I don't bake shit. I like my work. And I also like my kids, but I like leaving my kids. And yeah. but like anytime yeah. I'm trying to do anything in the kitchen, I don't think those people's kids are any better than my kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they're behaving because no kids really behave. And so they're going to be covered in flour. You're going to be cleaning that out of the cracks of your farmhouse kitchen. And so it's just like making all of this look idyllic. It's just making everyone more miserable with their lives and then making right. people buy more shit to feel better about themselves.
Hi there. If you are thinking I could really use a therapist to process this with me right now, I wanted to share my practice. Therapy for Women Center has therapists in the Philadelphia area, and also we have therapists for online therapy licensed in 43 states across the country. We would love to be able to help you, and I would love for you to learn more and check it out at therapyforwomencenter.com. The farm stuff really gets me because I've talked to Sam about this, but when I was in a really bad place during COVID, I got really into homesteader TikTok. I didn't even get into Hannah Nealman because she, you know, doesn't talk about like homesteading, but I got into like raising animals and how fulfilling it was. And I was like, I need to get off the grid and I need to get a cow and I need to just like be really, you know, animals are so fulfilling for me. This was before I had children, which I like, you know, I love my dog, but I'm like, you're a lot of work on some days. I just think it's so wild how like, obviously, I didn't go do that, but
it's a good thing. It's a good thing because you know what? Farm life is hard.
Okay? Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, it is so dirty. Like,
so
and no dirty. One like Hannah Nealman. Like when you watch her videos, it really seems like you know, she's wearing the milkmaid dresses.
You can't milk a cow in that. I have the milkmaid yeah. dress. It just arrived.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna milk a cow next weekend.
Oh my god, I love that you're doing that.
And also, I have a cow ready. I'm also going to harvest some eggs from some chickens and maybe chase some mini donkeys across a field, try to wrangle some mini donkeys. I'm doing what I can with what I have. And yeah. I'm borrowing my neighbors in the Catskills hobby farm animals.
Amazing.
And yeah, no shit. You're not wearing a dress to go out there. You're wearing muck boots and jeans. And you're certainly not strapping a baby to your chest.
Like, yes. No.
I think about that all
so
the time.
So dangerous. I look at her children near the cows and I'm like, oh my God,
get
how have none of them gotten
cows.
Kicked?
Get those cows. Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing. And it's amazing the things we choose to be nostalgic about too.
Yes.
You know, as Americans, we choose, you realize this when you have kids, like so many of the like kid books you get are still like the old McDonald had a farm. And I'm like, yeah. We should really change to like old McDonald ran a corporate food company and a factory farm because like no one actually has real farms anymore,
yep.
except for very rich people who have them yep. as hobby farms.
Yep.
But we're nostalgic for this idea. And look, I also cannot escape it. I was watching the new Meghan Markle show.
Yes.
The other day. Mm-hmm. And I nearly bought a beehive. I did. For the roof. And I didn't do it. But Because then I got sucked down a rabbit hole. I'm like, oh, well, there is this $1,000 beehive where it looks like you don't have to do anything.
I have all my contraptions I looked at. I was like, the cleanest way.
The cleanest one. You can just like turn a spigot. Yeah. And then I was like, no, you don't. Just go to the farmer's market. Yeah. It's okay. But like the things that we like in our head, we're like, that is idyllic. That that is going to solve my anxiety. If I could just have fucking bees on my roof. Like why? Why is that a thing that looks aspirational and beautiful?
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up the aspirational piece because I'm a history buff, Joe. That is like my
Sames,
hobby, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And something that I've been paying a lot more attention to is how the America First movement today is actually a rebrand of the America First movement from the 30s, which was also Nazi Germany's propaganda arm into the United States to try to see if they could make far right socialism, Nazism take root in the United States because they saw how naturally conservative we are. I mean, at the point we were fully segregated in most of the country. Right. There were no, like, lynchings were still happening. Like, we were kind of a ripe ground for what their insane belief system was. Charles Lindbergh was a huge proponent of this idea of America First and this idea of isolationism. And he had this obsession that we would all just be happier if we left modern life behind and went to farms. When I hear that, I think it's so sinister yet hilarious at the same time because this is – there's like something in the American fabric that we have these like bizarre like generational and centuries-long obsessions with these like oppressive lifestyles and these oppressive systems.
Yes.
And
yes.
Even I saw someone joke like, you know, people wonder why the United States is so conservative. Like, we got the conservative rejects from England. Like, they were too conservative for England. Yeah. And they came over here to be like, we're going to start our perfect little colony where you can't dance and you can't laugh and you can't sing and you can't have joy because God doesn't like joy because that's Satan.
Yeah. I mean, up until Footloose times. Okay.
Literally.
Literally.
Literally. And so I don't mean to take us down like this history path, but I think the tradwife movement today is just heartbreaking and fascinating to me because it's just everything is repeating itself. Yes. And it's this cycle. And what feels so particularly sinister to me is that these women are benefiting from all of the progress that has been made.
Oh, yeah.
And these tradwife influencers are standing on the shoulders of everybody who fought for their right to be in a room where they could negotiate a contract, where they could be considered for a brand deal and a business opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they are spitting on anybody else's opportunity to be able to have that.
Yeah.
And saying, well, I'm like using it for my own benefit and the benefit of my family and creating generational wealth for my family. But don't you dare do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What you need to be doing is surrendering to your man and stepping into your feminine energy and don't use your brain. Like,
yes.
I, you know, it's during the election, I saw the content around women being like, I don't need to know who to vote for because my husband's going to tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's very real. That's the thing. I will say I've been a journalist in New York City, LA, and San Francisco for a long time. I'm clearly part of the problem, but I have lived in these media circles. And I just think people didn't get out of their bubbles nearly enough to see that this has been happening in the rest of their country. And even now I live in Philly, which is a very progressive city. It's the best city to live in the world. But you know, you go to the suburbs where my mom's from and I'm like, a lot of Trump Vance signs and a lot of women falling for this shit.
Yeah.
Being like, why would I want to go back to work after I have my kids? And I'm not also, that's a choice. Like I think about this a lot. The conversation we're not having about work is that most people hate their fucking jobs.
Yes.
Right. Like most people don't get to do what I do, which is just talk shit for a living and write books. Like I like my job. Okay. Yeah. And I'm paid well for it. So like I'm a happy person for those reasons. And so I think it's important to say those things out loud because a lot of people for a job means 9 to 5 and you have a shitty boss and you have no flexibility and you sit in like a gray, sad cubicle and you fucking hate your life. So you're like, I want to check out and bake some damn
bread. Now you have to sit in your own house and you have like no space and your life is one blob.
And your life is one blob. Like, I think it's a privilege to have jobs that you like. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's something that the media really forgets because, you know, for the most part, if you're working in media, you have a great job. Like this is a fun, it's a fun job. Yeah.
It's flexible.
It's flexible. And I think like even my worst media jobs, like, we're still fun jobs. Yeah, you know, that's why every woman in 90s rom-com is a journalist. So
Andy Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. There's such little knowledge or observation or empathy for people that actually hate their work. Yeah. And so when you're like, what, why would you give up work? Like, oh my gosh, you're participating in your own oppression. A lot of women don't like their jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, same as a lot of men don't like their jobs. I do think if we lived in a different kind of world, if men were offered the choice to not have jobs, they would say yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my husband has been out of work for like a year now because no one's ever going to hire a 50-year-old man again. And I think he finally likes it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think like farming offers this like – this very passive seeming entrepreneurial vibe.
Yeah.
Like, right, exactly. Oh,
I get up and I dictate my own schedule and I do this and I do that. Like, that sounds really nice. Or when I was working in the emergency room, Joe, I worked in a trauma and emergency room for 5.5 years. And I can tell you smack dab in the middle, if there had been a man wealthy enough who came along and was like, let me take care of you, I would have been like, say less, my man. Like, what do you need? Like, what would you like me to wear during the day?
I was actually thinking about that. I love that you brought that up because I was in the ER recently. I had pneumonia. And the staff working in the trauma center was so beaten down by the job, by the people, by the corporations running the companies. I was like, this is a prime example. Like, a lot of work fucking sucks. Okay. Yes. So like, I can see why people would want an off ramp.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Because I wanted an off ramp. Like, I remember wanting one. And thankfully, I just went and figured out how to build like a different option for myself and take advantage of other opportunities. Right. I think what we're missing here in the larger conversation is that this is the perfect example of an unintended consequence with abandoning workers' rights, abandoning unions, abandoning progressive policy. Mm-hmm. And it's so infuriating because we were lied to as women. Yep. And I think especially millennial women, where we were kind of like given this crown orb and scepter of being anointed as the first generation that was going to have like all of these rights and freedoms and everything was going to be good. And then 08 collapses the year I graduated high school. And it's been really, really hard ever since. And the pandemic put that into overdrive. I think people, because of the isolation, because of being at home, all of them were forced to look in the mirror and realize exactly as you said, how miserable they were. Instead of looking for other options, the easiest one that was being presented to them was what was on their little computers in front of their face.
You're not leaning into your feminine energy. And, you know, this concept, this branding of leaning into your feminine energy is directly coming from the right. That is what they've been financing. Like that is a marketing strategy for them. Again, we know this. That's not a conspiracy theory. They've been very open and clear about that. Yeah. And so this, you know, quote unquote, return to traditional gender roles. And so, I understand all of it. I think my call to arms and, you know, I wrote this Chadwife murder mystery. I started writing it as a joke. I did. Because I was like, wouldn't it be funny if all the Chadwives just started murdering their husbands? And then I was like, oh, it's a book. It's got to be a real book. And now it is. And now it's coming out in July. But, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a pulpy bananas murder mystery. But it's also a call to arms for young women to think about because everything is burning to the ground right now.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you want? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Republicans had 2025, Project 2025. Yeah. We need to create a Project 2025 for feminism, for womanhood. Feminism has failed us in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Like that's like there's a big discussion we can have there. What do we want? What policy goals will help us get there? Mm-hmm. And it's everything from women's health care and abortion rights, paid childcare, to also easier access to capital and markets for women to grow generational wealth, even if you do choose to stay home with your children, right? Yeah. Yeah. So all of even basic basic universal income, you know, so that if a woman does stay home and checks out of the workforce, she has money to support herself when her husband leaves her or dies, because that's what men do half the time.
Yes.
I say all the time, my my parents had a terrible marriage, but they stayed together till the very end. When my dad died, my mom found out that he had taken out a second mortgage on their house and she had fucking nothing.
Oh my God. Lord.
Right? And so, like,
but we this all is know a woman, stories like that, Joe.
It's like there's more stories like that than there are not stories like that, right? And so, I'm just like, and now I'm stuck as an only child, like juggling her finances. Oh. And so, it's so clear, like even if your marriage doesn't end terribly,
right,
you could still be screwed in the end if you're a person who doesn't have agency over your own life.
Yeah.
And, well, and I think about that. But we also don't – I think we hear those stories, but they always seem so far away. And so I tell that one a lot to be like, you all know me, okay?
Yeah.
Like, I am like a normal human being in the world. And like my dad screwed my mom like this. So like it's a thing that happens.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely. I – you know, my growing up, my mom never worked. She was a stay-at-home mom. My younger brother has severe disabilities and she – and my dad have been – well, she was his primary caregiver for the longest time while my dad was in the peak of his career. Mm-hmm. And we were very, very lucky in that my dad was a high earner and they had income flexibility and we had disposable income and all of those sorts of things. And my mom would say to me every day, you still need to make your own money. You need to be taking care of yourself. You need to have access. And she goes, I got really lucky that I have a man that if I didn't pay the bills and manage the finances, we would be homeless despite him making $500,000 a year. Like he has really bad ADHD, which is why he was so good at sales because he hyperfixated and he would forget to pay his Amex bill for 4 months. And you know, like he would come on and say this. He goes, yeah, like I gave over all finances to my wife because she was the better financial planner. And I grew up in a very rare situation where my dad was perfectly fine and confident with having that dynamic of being the earner and having his wife manage the finances. And they were still telling me, like, we are rare. Like you cannot assume that that will happen or that – you know, you shouldn't be aware of how to care for yourself financially and be prepared financially. Mm-hmm. And I think with looking at these trad wives, I want you making that money. I want you getting those brand deals. I want you to have that security for your children. But then just level with me. Like, I would have so much more respect for you if you were like, you know what, I am a stay-at-home mom that has figured out how to build a business and my target audience are stay-at-home moms because that's who my products are for. Wonderful. Great.
Wonderful.
Yeah. That truly is what feminism is, right?
Yes.
It's choice. Being able – it's choice. It is choice in all directions.
Yep. In all directions. And also, you know, not creating a like hierarchy of what's a better woman.
Yes.
Too, which I do think – that the 80s and 90s and 2000s version of feminism did.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, if you are in a lawyer or a doctor or a journalist, like, you're the good kind of woman. Or and if you're a stay-at-home mom or an exotic dancer, you're not the right kind of feminist, right? Like it was very exclusive and condescending, and that's not right either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I am still surprised myself at how much – even though I know all of this stuff and I'm a therapist who works with people and knows what they're probably posting on social media compared to what they're saying in session, but I can still, especially with motherhood content, get very down the rabbit hole if I'm feeling bad about myself of am I doing something wrong? Am I not a good enough parent? I'm worrying about my – like it is truly wild to me how effective it is
Yeah, absolutely. It just is. Okay. And even me, like, I know these things, and yet I still thought that I wanted to buy bees.
Yeah. Because it makes you feel like, because that's kind of where I got in COVID, is I really was like, maybe, you know, there is something wrong with the way we're living and there's more to life. And I read all these books about homesteading, which thankfully were very honest and brutal about.
Well, that's the thing. If you talk to a real homesteader or a real farmer, which I do,
it ain't that.
They're like, this is hard and not pretty and not beautiful and
not a way to make wealth.
Not a way to make generational wealth.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. No. I mean, again, it often feels like everyone is lying to you. I don't know what's going to happen next, though, because it's very hard to make the opposite look aspirational, right? Yeah. Like, it's okay to just be doing your best to that you're eating half the chicken nuggets off your kid's plate and that you're kind of happy and joking with your husband sometimes. Like, the average life doesn't look aspirational. And so we're not seeing it on social media, and that's where people's eyeballs are all the time.
Yeah.
So I do think that we're going to see a crisis of people getting more disillusioned with their own lives as they just stare at these little screens.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there is going to be a fallout, I think, in some form. I don't know the how, I don't know the when, but as younger girls maybe get married super early and marry these men, who are not providers, who also think that they are not responsible for really anything.
Like, for anything.
That's really what the manosphere is saying right now, is that men don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
It's expected that the woman does everything. Yep. And so when women get in these lives and nothing changes, nothing gets better, they just get more stressed because now they have two kids that they have to figure out how to provide for, and they don't have enough. Like, it is really devastating because we know we're talking about satire and fantasy.
Yeah.
And there are so many of these young girls that think this is in fact going to be reality.
100%. 100%. In fact, I mean, every babysitter that I've had in the past 4 years believes, despite my tutelage, believes that a man is the plan and a man is the answer.
Oh, it's so heartbreaking.
Scary. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking, you know, and I'm constantly like, you know, trying to be like, let me. And they're just like, you look exhausted all the time. And I'm like, that's because life is exhausting, girlfriend.
Joe, I do have a question, because earlier in your book, well, when you mentioned your book, you said it's like a call to action. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think for me, I am a very, and as a therapist, this is going to take absolutely 0% of people by surprise, I am a very solution focused person. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, I am a big believer in action as the antidote to anxiety.
Yep.
And we can sit and lay down and let this happen to us, or we can do something about it. Yeah. And I think from your research, from your experience, what would you say is a way that we could be combating this?
There's a couple things. One of them, we have to be way more honest with ourselves and the people around us, you know, about what life is really like and what is working for us and what isn't working for us. You know, I ran into a friend. I went to the gym right before we got and hopped on this podcast. And I ran into a friend. And, like, both of us are just like, God, everything sucks. And like, in the middle of the gym. And she's like, I hate everyone. And I'm like, I hate everyone too. And, you know, I just started going off about shit with my mom, and she's going off about stuff with her job and her kids. And, you know, I think that level of honesty, we don't always have to be like, lament that everything sucks, but, you know, no longer being like, how are you? I'm fine. Everything's fine, because it's not fine. Right. And so, you know, talking about those real things and then getting the fuck off of our phones. Okay. Yeah. Like, these things are killing us in so many ways. We don't know how to communicate with other people anymore. We've had so much of the joy sucked out of our lives. I just literally stopped the scrolling. Scrolling does nothing good for anyone at this point. I am at a point where I can't get off social media because I need people to buy my book.
Yeah.
Because as I said, my husband's never going to have a job again. So, and I'm clearly supporting my mother. So, guys, buy Everyone Is Lying to You. Just buy 19 copies. Okay. So I can't get off social media, but I log on and I post and I leave. I don't scroll. Yeah. Because I know it's not, nothing good is going to happen. Yeah. When I scroll, I scrolled when I was like pretty tipsy the other night, and I spent $300 at Bowdoin on matching sundresses from my 5-year-old and I. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah. Right. I think that's the hard thing about Trav Wives or feminism is we've gone from, you know, all or nothing. We're like so polarized. And you talked a lot about how we have to like, women can be stay-at-home moms. That's empowering. Mm-hmm. It's about the choice that matters, not about what your life looks like.
Yeah.
Are there any other, as a journalist, are there any other critical thinking skills or tips you have for people listening? Maybe the tip is to get off your phone.
Well, the tip is to get off your phone and into real life, but also to kind of break out of your bubbles. I think we're in bubbles. Yeah. I mean, we were literally put into bubbles in COVID, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, I talked to a linguist once who had been advising the government on how to talk during COVID. Mm-hmm. And he warned them. Mm-hmm. He was like, I just don't think you should say social distancing. He's like, I really think physical distancing would be better, because when you say social distancing, you're moving people away from each other in a very distinct way. Physical distancing would be better. They didn't listen to him.
Yeah, it is weird that they used that word when physical distancing is what matters.
Is what mattered, but they said social distancing. And I think that really it lodged in our brains and it did a lot of really damaging things, because we are, and now we're in more and more bubbles. Mm. I used to have friends that didn't agree with me politically. Now I feel like that would never happen. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we can find common ground with people who don't have the same beliefs as us. I mean, I think Trump is different than a normal Republican.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I say 100%. That all the time. I don't understand this as a person who covered politics for so long. And yet, we've got to cope. We've got to find a way to, especially for women, to come together and realize that the problems facing women are the same for all of us. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to be secure. We want our kids to be secure. And I think we're just being more and more splintered apart.
Yeah.
Well, there's been like a post that I've been wanting to throw up for like a really long time. I would say like the last couple months, like since the results of the election were official. And it's for my white sistren and brethren. And this is not for people of color. You've done the work, 92% of you. Like, please sit down, rest. You're fine. You've done it. This is for my fellow whites. And I'll just say it here because it's a safe space.
Isn't
cancel culture over, right? I mean,
it better be.
Yeah. I am hoping so, because I really squeaked by the skin of my teeth.
We barely made it out.
Barely made it out. So I'm really hoping that that's done.
Part of why I think we are in this mess, and I think specifically like my left-leaning, liberal, progressive white sister and brethren, we have been insufferable the last like 5 years. We are annoying. We are rude. We are exclusionary. We are judgy. We're not fun. We are not fun. And the reason why the right is so successful is they don't tell anybody no. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to add is like, if I right now were to go on social media and make a post saying, I am a liberal who has now become like, I'm now believe in right wing and here's why, I would be paraded around DC tomorrow like Trump's mugshot. I would be seen as a hero. I would be lauded. I would be on every podcast.
Yeah.
I would like, it would be
Elon Musk would impregnate you without even touching you.
Sorry, I'm going to go run now far
just
away.
Just go take a shower.
But the reason I'm saying that is because what I've been seeing on social media is there are people since January 20th who voted for Trump who are now coming out and saying, I regret it. I didn't realize this. I didn't realize how serious it was. And in the comments, people are like, concepts of thoughts and prayers. Like, I wish I felt bad for you. And I'm like, shut up. Yeah. Shut
Stop.
up.
Just it's stop. Not helpful. Yeah. No, we need that person to feel empowered and safe to recognize that they didn't understand something, maybe didn't know something. They were in their own bubble just as we were, because I was convinced Kamala was going to win.
Yeah.
That was devastating.
A lot of people were.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have to figure out how to be willing to see this whole movement as a bus. And we're all getting on the bus and we're all going in the same direction. And even though you might have some thoughts and I'm like, I don't love that, but we need people on the bus. And I've just been really, really frustrated with like the moral purity, the finger pointing, the perfectionism, the all or nothing. And we're just boring and we're obnoxious. I think another big thing that we need to do if we want to combat, you know, among everything else, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Tradwife pipeline we have to let everybody in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to be willing to let everybody in.
And show the joy again. Show the joy in the messiness. Yes. Like, look, yes, being a working mother is hard, but like, I like it. Like, this is nice. This is fun. Yeah. I like my kids. I like my husband most of the time.
Yeah.
I like get to make money and go on cool trips. And like, that's fun. I think I see so much complaining on social media from the left instead of just like, hey, I like my life. Okay. Yeah. I'm good.
It's almost like we've split off so much that if you share that you are happy or you share that things are right, it's like you're not paying attention.
You're so privileged.
Shut up and check your privilege.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not helpful either.
So we all have to cosplay misery.
Well, I know you already talked a bit about your book, Joe, but will you tell us a little bit, any other tidbits?
Oh, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun. It is called Everyone is Lying to You. It comes out July 15th, but we have to tell everyone to pre-order now because if you don't pre-order books, you know, the publishing industry freaks out. no, but it does help because then, you know, more books are printed and it's a big deal. It's a big deal. So everyone pre-order, Everyone is Lying to You now. It's in paperback, which I love because it's so much easier to carry around in the summer.
Yes.
Hardcovers can be a pain in the ass when you want to go to the beach. And it's a story about two friends, one of whom has become a Tradwife influencer. And suddenly she disappears. And her friend from college, because they've gone their separate ways, has to try to figure out what has happened to her, whether or not she's been murdered by her husband, or perhaps she's the one who murdered him. And both she and her gaggle of, I think it's six or seven kids, I forget, because I added an AI baby at one point. to the mix. The mantra of the book was, can you make this weirder? And then like the weird stuff would happen in real life. Like then an influencer was revealed to have an AI baby. I mean, it's fun, but it also, you know, it sets this up. I wrote the book before Trump won.
Wow.
Okay. Oof. And I told the publishers it had to come out fast because there's Tradwife books in the pipeline that aren't coming out for 2 years.
Yeah.
And they were like, we don't do things fast. And I'm like, I'm well aware. So it feels very poignant. It feels of the moment. It feels like a prelude to The Handmaid's Tale. And it could go the direction of Handmaid's Tale. Or women can take back the narrative. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but like this is a book that gives you hope. And at the end, you're going to be fucking cheering for what happens.
We need that. I love that.
I'm so excited, Joe. Seriously, I'm like sitting here like, but what happened? Can you tell us when we stop recording?
Well, in the meantime, I read Sicilian Inheritance and it was awesome.
Oh, thank you. I love Sicilian Inheritance. That comes out in paperback in a week, which is amazing. And also a book about, you know, strong, badass women helping each other and empowering each other, which is pretty much the only thing I write these days.
What we need.
It's what we need. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Joe, for coming on. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll have to chat with you more at some point later, maybe on Substack or something like that. We love your work.
And when Everyone is Lying to You comes out, I'm doing a 15-city book tour where we're doing a Tradwife costume contest. We're doing pie baking and eating and throwing at men events.
Oh my God.
It's going to be a romp and a half.
Well, I assume there'll be one in Philly, right?
Yeah. We'll be at the Barnes & Noble in Center City.
Amazing.
And then we've got one on the main line. We've got, I've got everything covered. Everything
love
covered.
Love it.
And don't you worry, I'll be going to Salt Lake City. Get ready for me, ladies. Perfect. And, you know, I think they're going to love it. They're going to love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, Joe, thank you so much for coming on. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye.